Okay, it's 9 a.m. This meeting is called to order. I'm going to start by...
Hi, Sam Mellon here.
Hi, thanks for joining.
Good morning, sir. We have just started the meeting. At the appropriate time, we'll ask you to unmute. We'll announce your case. When you hear that, you can unmute your phone. And so if you understood that, would you just acknowledge and then mute your phone, please?
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thank you all for joining. We're going to start with a roll call.
Ms. Powell.
Present.
Dr. Bennett. Here. Dr. Kanoff.
Here.
Dr. Garino.
Here. Okay, at this time I'd like to recognize our newly licensed chiropractors. Anybody who's been licensed in the last year is required to attend one of our meetings. I hope that you find it very informative. And without further ado, we're going to move on to our formal hearing. And that will be tab number one in the matter of Dr. Jordan Ball. So Dr. Ball is not present, is that correct?
He's not signed in.
Okay, thank you.
Nor is the counsel.
Okay. And so at this time, we would you like to make a motion to deem?
Yes, Dr. Carino, members of the board, good morning. I believe all of you have a motion to deem allegations admitted that was filed on behalf of the state. Let's see if we can fix that. All right. Thank you. So the motion to deem allegations admitted was filed because Dr. Ball has been legally served with a complaint and notice of hearing in the two cases, 2019-015 and 2019-018, and he has failed to respond to the complaint and notice of hearing within the time period mandated by your statutes. Initially, the complaint notice of hearing was initially served in on October 30th of 2019, and that was sent to the address of record that was on file with the board. Subsequent to the board serving that, it was discovered that there might be some problems with the address, so the complaint was reissued on January 14th of 2020, and that complaint was sent to an address that Dr. Ball himself had indicated on a renewal application that he filed with the board recently. So with that complaint and notice of hearing, the certified mail was returned to the board as returned to sender, unclaimed, unable to forward. The complaint and notice of hearing had also been sent through regular mail, and that was not returned to the board. So because the regular mail...
Yes, you've joined the call. Hang on.
Hi, Sam Mellon here.
Hello, can you hear me now? This is Dr. Kowalski with the State Board. Are you, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, if you could, when your tab is called, when your name is called, you can unmute your phone, and until that time, to keep the background noise, would you please mute your phones? Please acknowledge and then do so. There we go.
Okay, continue. Thank you.
Thank you. So the regular mail that was sent to the same address that was given on Dr. Ball's renewal application was not returned to the board, so that is presumed to have been delivered to him. Under your statute, ARS 32-924H, a licensee or respondent in the case is required to file an answer to the allegations and charges within 20 days. And Dr. Ball has not done that, and he has not to date filed any response. He has failed to respond to emails and calls from your executive director. When I filed the motion to deem, I mailed it, both certified mail and regular mail. I haven't got any indication that I think it was attempted delivery. I haven't gotten any indication that the regular mail has come back. And I also, on the day I filed it, emailed it to Dr. Ball an email asking him to contact me along with the motion to deem. I did not get a bounce back on that email, so I presume that it was delivered to a valid address. So basically, first I would ask the board to consider granting the state's motion to deem allegation admitted. If you do grant that motion, then I would ask that you adopt the factual allegations in the complaint notice of hearing as your findings of fact for your board order, and the alleged violation in the complaint notice of hearing as the conclusions of law. And then I will defer to the board on what you believe the appropriate disciplinary sanction would be in this matter. Any questions?
Not at this time. Board members, any questions?
No.
Okay, so board members, would you like to make a motion to deem allegations accepted?
Yes, this is Dr. Knopf. I move that the board grant the state's motion to deem allegations admitted.
Okay, is there a second? Okay, there's a second by Ms. Powell. I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries. At this point then, is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and violations?
This is Dr. Knopf. I move the board to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint notice of hearings as findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Second the motion.
Okay, we have a second by Ms. Powell. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none. We have adopted the factual allegations and conclusions of law. So at this point, Ms. Williams, do you have any recommendations for discipline?
I will refer to the board at this point, and I believe Dr. Ball has been given numerous opportunities to respond to the complaints initially. We're initially sending him that an address of record, and then I believe staff actually had followed up with him with an email telling him how important it was for him to respond to the complaints, and that's never been done. If you believe Dr. Ball is unregulatable at this time, then I believe it would an appropriate sanction could be revocation.
Okay. Board members, any questions?
Just for a discussion, I believe he's already on administrative suspension at this point, and it's hard to really understand. My concern is does he know that he shouldn't even be practicing under this status right now? So that's just something I'm trying to think about as we go into this.
May I ask the people on the phone to please mute their phones?
Sure.
If you're on the telephone call, would you please mute your telephone?
Martin, I believe what we're hearing is the delayed sound effect of our own voices.
Okay, so at this point, is there a motion to revoke or take other action?
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make the motion to revoke Dr. Jordan Ball's license at this point.
Is there a second?
I'm seconding the motion.
Okay, so we have a first and a second, and for discussion, I have the same concern. You know, we've been unable to regulate him because he's failed to show up at the meetings that he's been invited to and subpoenaed to appear in front of us. It's peculiar that he tried to renew his license, and Dr. Kolash, you did say that he had there was a payment that was made.
Yes. Just a little history on his administrative suspension. In last year, December 31st, 2018, he tried to renew his license, but his application was incomplete, and so he was notified that he was on administrative suspension. He never replied to that. On December 31st of 2019, a application for renewal arrived Again, he was notified that that application would be on administrative suspension because he hadn't shown that his continuing ed for 2018 had been properly taken. And so then we, to this point, he has not responded to that. The payment for this year was not by Jordan Ball, but by a Janice Ball, as I recall. So who submitted the actual renewal, I don't know.
And that was my concern, is that during the renewal process, you know, we have a digital signature when they go through and they try to renew online, but we really don't have an authorized doctor signature. And so somebody could have paid his fee and submitted his renewal form because they want to keep his active license for billing purposes or for whatever reason, and it may not have or may not have been him. So in any case,
Dr. Green, I need, however, please, the determination regarding the discipline to be imposed in this case, revocation, whatever, needs to be based upon the facts.
Absolutely.
In this, that the board has deemed as admitted. Clearly, the failure to be responsive to the board in this formal hearing procedure, that is an aggravating factor, but the focus does need to be on this particular set of facts.
Okay. So we have a first and second to revoke. Is there any further discussion? Okay, then we'll take a roll call vote.
Ms. Powell.
Yes, do you want me to state my name first?
Yes.
Okay, Angela Powell.
And your vote?
Yes, to affirm.
Dr. Bennett?
Yeah, Dr. Bennett, aye.
Dr. Knopf?
Dr. Knopf, aye.
Dr. Garino?
Aye. Okay, so the ayes have it. It's unanimous, and we will revoke license number 8367. Okay, thank you. Who is on the phone for which tab am I?
Those on the telephone, would you please unmute and identify yourselves?
Dr. Karen Goff.
Dr. Vella.
Dr. Mark Kennan and Counsel Cynthia Shepherd.
So, Tennant and Vella.
Okay, thank you.
Is anyone else on the line? Okay, if you please mute your phones again until you hear your names called.
Okay, which is right now we're going to tab number 2 under whether to open in the matter of Dr. Mark Tennant. Can we get a board briefing?
Yes. Dr. Tennant answered yes to question 18 on his application and said see the attachment, and no to question 17 on his 2020 renewal form. Dr. Tennant provided a written statement stating that he is currently the subject of a petition by the Kansas State Board of Healing Arts. The assertions made against him in the petition include allegations of statutory and regulatory violations, all arising out of alleged problems with his charting of patient examination and treatment. The petition alleges some of Dr. Tennant's patient care and treatment cannot be shown to meet the standard of care required of him because of the lack of certain information in the patient charts. It also alleges insurance claims submitted by Dr. Tennant included charges for care and treatment not reflected in his patient charting. Dr. Tennant denies all of the allegations made against him and is represented by legal counsel for his defense in the petition. They are on the phone.
Okay. Go ahead and make an opening statement on the phone then if you would like. At this point, this is Dr. Garino, Chairman of the Board.
Thank you. Dr. Garino and the Board, who is participating. This is Cynthia Shepherd on behalf of Dr. Mark Tennant. And what I can tell you is, at this point, the petition is still in the Kansas Board of Healing Arts.
Can you hold on a moment, please?
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Mary Williams, Assistant Attorney General. Are you an attorney licensed in Arizona?
No, I'm not.
Okay, Dr. Greeno, I apologize, but because she is not licensed in Arizona, she's unable to represent Dr. Tennant before this board until she could get he could get legal counsel here in the state, or she could get limited admission. So if you want to table this, or if Dr. Tennant chooses to act on his own behalf, he could do that.
Okay. Dr. Tennant, I'll give you an opportunity to represent and speak for yourself at this time. So, well, you don't have to say anything. I'm giving you an opportunity to speak right now. Do you wish to represent yourself, or would you like to retain legal counsel licensed in Arizona? Okay. Well, then we're going to go ahead and table this matter until and so that you have an opportunity to do that.
I'll be in touch.
Okay. And
thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So we'll go on to the next tab, number 3, at this point, in the matter of Dr. Melvin Hackler.
And Dr. Hackler is in the attendance with counsel.
Hi, there's a microphone in front of you that's got a red LED, which indicates it's not on right now. If you push the button right in the front there, it'll turn green. Thank you. And then I'd like you to introduce yourselves.
My name is Dr. Melvin Gregory Hacker, Doctor of Chiropractic, State of Arizona.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is James Ledbetter. I represent Dr. Hacker, license number 1049.
Okay, thank you. Our executive director is going to give us a board briefing.
This is a whether to open case. Dr. Melvin Hackler, license 1049, and it's active. Dr. Hackler marked yes on questions 23, 24, 22, 23, and 24 on his 2020 renewal form. And the Ledbetter Law Firm represents Dr. Hackler. And they provided an explanation of the situation, which is in your packet. Let's see. Mr. Ledbetter goes on to say that the prosecutor did not complete the prosecution of this case and instead offered a deferred prosecution to Dr. Hackler, wherein the matter would be completely dismissed at the end of 6 months. Dr. Hackler submitted a letter of support, and I think the matter before you is because the public record indicated that the citation was released, but he was arrested, and that is a violation of our, I'm sorry, not a violation. They need to, if someone was arrested, they need to inform the board within 10 days, and since the public record said arrested, it's here to find out if that is the case.
Okay. Mr. Ledbetter, would you like to make an opening statement?
I would, thank you. If I could clarify, there wasn't an actual arrest, it was a traffic citation under the traffic code. So what occurred on this incident in May, and we're here to ask you not to open a formal investigation, both because of the underlying incident just doesn't meet that threshold requirement statutorily to conduct an investigation. And if I might, I could give you some of the underlying facts. Dr. Hackler was a passenger in a vehicle which he did not own, and he was handed an open container. At the time of the stop, the officer saw it and reported that anybody, as you correctly assess, that's in a vehicle where there's an open container, even if there's been no consumption, can be cited for an open container. The driver was cited, Dr. Hackler was cited. Immediately thereafter, the chief of police wrote a letter to the prosecutor asking that no action be taken. The prosecutor agreed that in 6 months to drop all charges, assuming Dr. Hackler didn't do anything else. That, in fact, occurred. So as we stand here today, there are no charges whatsoever. They were never formally brought. They were never prosecuted. There was a traffic citation, however, for the open container violation for everyone in the vehicle, Dr. Hackler and the driver. Dr. Hackler did retain counsel to review this as to whether it should be reported on license. He was within a 10-day time period, and that was looked at very closely under your statutes, specifically beginning with 3208A. And the question is there a misdemeanor that involves conduct that may affect the safety of patients. Well, this was a non-consumptionist incident. A container handed to him. Respectfully, we don't think that meets the threshold for affecting patient safety. Then the next question would be, is this unprofessional, dishonorable conduct or character likely to deceive or defraud the public? We would respectfully submit the answer to that would be no as well. Or where does it tend to discredit the profession? The answer to that would be no, it doesn't involve anything with respect to profession, we respectfully submit. And that particular question begs an interesting question about who Dr. Hackler is. You saw from the letter from the chief of police, he is the founder of Citizens Coalition for Public Safety in Winslow, Arizona. He founded the Standing on the Corner Society or organization that was revitalizing downtown Winslow. He also is the founding member of the domestic violence shelter in Winslow. So as an individual who it might be argued would bring discredit on the profession, this particular chiropractic position is exactly opposite all of those things. He's a credit to your profession, respectfully. He's a humble gentleman. I don't think he would say these things. I first met him when he was the founding member of the Hospitals Foundation. He does all of these things for his community. He's a credit to the community. And when he's presented with the specific questions on his renewal application, he did disclose this incident. But again, the underlying incident itself doesn't meet the threshold of any level of intoxication because it was a non-consumption issue. There's not even a suggestion that he had consumed anything he had not. So accordingly, on the 10-day reporting period, that would not have been triggered, we respectfully submit under the statutory citations. And also the charge ultimately was immediately not prosecuted and dismissed within the 6-month time period. That occurred in January. And then lastly, as a credit to himself, with respect to specific questions asked on licensing renewal, he did disclose the incident. So we submit to you that going forward with a hearing wouldn't do anything to change the outcome of this case. He is the type of chiropractic physician that shouldn't be regulated in this regard because of this underlying incident. It's not the type of thing that brought any discredit to the profession. In fact, he does exactly the opposite. So thank you.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for the doctor or his counsel?
No questions.
Ms. Williams, do you agree that I'm looking at, I guess I'm relying on you for the interpretation of our law. Do you agree that this was not something that needed to be reported?
Well, the statute says a health professional who has been charged with a misdemeanor involving conduct that may affect patient safety. So I think there's two questions. Has he been charged? It doesn't sound like it. And then the second question would be one that the board would have to determine, would it involve patient? Is it conduct that involves patient safety? So if it is a true traffic stop, it most likely probably wouldn't fall under that.
Okay. So board members, your task then is to decide if this needs to be opened in a claim or a case number assigned to it, or if it's something that we would take no action on. Does somebody want to make a motion?
I'd like to make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that we take no action in this case.
Is there a second?
I'll have a second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the ayes have it, and we will take no action. Thanks for coming today. We're going to move on to tab number 4 now.
Thank you all.
Okay. Tab number 4 is a matter of Dr. Robert Liebman.
Dr. Liebman is also a whether to open case, and he has signed in to represent himself.
Hi. Please introduce yourself for the recorded record.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Robert Liebman, Scottsdale, Arizona, license number 4656.
Okay. Yeah, we have the number. That's okay. Dr. Kolash, can you give us the executive director's briefing?
Dr. Liebman replied yes to questions 22, 23, and 24 on his 2020 renewal application and provided a statement that he was arrested for DUI on April 6, 2019. So this may be a violation to have failed to report the arrest of April 6, 2019 to the board within 10 days as stated in our statute.
Okay, so I promise you we've read all the board meeting materials. Do you have anything you'd like to say at this point in an opening statement or any additional information?
I don't. I'd just like to address the board and say that, as I stated in my letter, I feel I had done everything I thought was necessary. I complied with every agency. When Ms. Kennel contacted me, I provided all the information post-haste. And I would just ask that the board see the totality of my actions as being compliant. This is truly was an oversight. As of next month, I will be licensed in Arizona for 30 years, and this is my first time here. It was not a willing disregard of my requirement. As of last week, I had completed everything, including interrupted by some of my vehicle, and this is my last step. And this has been stressful and embarrassing and a learning experience, certainly. And again, I would simply ask the board to allow me the opportunity to move forward with my practice and my life, put this behind me respectfully.
Okay, so you do acknowledge that you failed to report the arrest, and
I do.
Okay. So we do have a violation of a statute, and you know, I'm going to make a motion that we open up a complaint, a case number. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, the ayes have it, which means that you'll be back on our agenda on another date, and we'll decide what to do at that time.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for coming through. Okay. Our next matter before us is tab number 5 in with Dr. Paul Sinclair.
Dr. Sinclair has not signed in. Are you on the telephone, Dr. Sinclair? Hearing that, I'd like to proceed. Dr. Sinclair was placed on probation, and he has asked for a termination of that probation. And at this point, he is in compliance with the terms of that probation.
Okay, board members, any concerns?
None for me. I would make the motion to move Dr. Sinclair off of the probation, terminate it.
Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, I'll call for the question to terminate probation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, the ayes have it. We'll move on to tab number 6 now, which we don't need to. This was Dr. Jordan Balva. We've already dealt with this in the first tab, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll go on to tab number 7, which is licensure regarding Lehi Demas. Did I say your name right?
Demas.
Hi. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Dr. Lehi Demas.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Kolash.
Yes, Dr. Demas has applied for licensure by examination and PMMTP certification. His application is complete at this time. Dr. Demas was previously licensed in Arizona and Idaho. His Arizona license lapsed effective January 1st, 2011. His Idaho license expired January 28th, 2010. Dr. Demas reveals that he's a legal alien resident and reports that his residential address has been in Peoria, Arizona from 2009 through the present. The usual background checks did not reveal anything reportable, and so the board may take several actions.
Okay. Do you have anything you'd like to tell us at this point?
No.
So your Arizona license lapsed in 2011. What have you been doing since then?
I've had other opportunities that were more lucrative at the time, and, you know, during the downturn in the economy. I had looked elsewhere for, you know, support my family, and now I'm looking to get my license back and get back to practicing.
Okay. So you've had a pretty big gap in any professional capacity, right, as a chiropractor?
Yes.
Which means you've missed about 8 or 9 years of continuing education and so on. One of the things that we've done in the past would be to have you take a special purposes exam, of a competency exam, whenever somebody's had a lapse that long. So I'm going to ask my board members if they have any thoughts or if they'd like to make a motion at this time.
Well, I guess I have a question first for Dr. Demas. I mean, have you been taking any actions to stay current within the profession over the last decade at all? And what might those have been?
I mean, I haven't taken any CE courses, if that's what you're asking. But, yeah. I mean, you know, I know enough doctors and, you know, I've been keeping up, you know, that way and whatever else, and reading literature, stuff, things that I get, but that's about it.
Okay.
What are your plans if you were granted a license? What do you plan on doing?
To go work for somebody, you know, possibly purchase a practice, get back into practice. That's what I'm looking to do.
Why don't you decide to go back into practice?
More than anything, you know, I like the job satisfaction in healthcare. Being able to help people become pain free is pretty rewarding. So.
I have a question for our Assistant Attorney General. Am I correct in assuming that the correct statutory language in this case is Section 32-933, paragraph C, that says, in addition to meeting the requirements of subsection B of this section, a licensee who has been on inactive status and who has not yet been actively engaged in the practice of chiropractic for more than 2 years must pass the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners spec examination before reinstatement to active licensure?
Except I don't know that he's officially been on inactive status.
Right. The status of his license is not inactive, which requires them to keep up with the continuing education. Oh, it does not require them to keep up the continuing education, but it requires them to keep renewal fees.
So and is inactive status a specific status?
Correct.
It is not that he's inactive.
It's
okay,
right.
That's a little confusing.
It's a status of licensure, as opposed to just having let your license expire.
Okay, but it does serve to clarify that we're not mandated by this language to require this particular level of compliance.
No, and I mean, it's a new application, correct? And he's not being reinstated, so you're treating this as any new application, so you have to be confident that Dr. Demas meets the requirement.
I quite agree. I just wanted to make sure that
right.
This was not the pertinent language.
Right.
And the inactive versus inactive status helps me to understand that a little better.
Can I just add something as well with that? But with a new application, the spec exam is not required as well, right? That's only for inactive status.
That's what we're
saying. Because I looked at that before. I applied and I was advised, because I was going to go that route, but because I wasn't on inactive status, I was advised to enter as a new applicant and new licensure, so new license number, all of the above, right?
Well, so that's what we're trying to determine right now, and I can tell you from my dealings with the National Board, the special purposes exam is for, it's a test that is specifically designed for somebody who's been out of school for a while, that you want to check a minimum baseline competency. It's not designed to be like a trivia test with the National Board for those that are actively enrolled in school. And so my question for you is, would you be agreeable if one of the options I believe we can do today is we could grant a license and request a consent agreement that you are going to, you know, take and pass the spec exam and then at that point,
I think legally I don't have to take that though, is kind of where I'm at with that. So I mean, like, if I'm required to do that, I'm happy to do that.
Okay.
But, you know, as far as where the law stands, I think that, you know, I'm well within where I'm at right now. Am I wrong on that?
Well, we're trying to make that determination right now.
Okay.
Do you want an executive session for legal advice?
I do. I'm going to make a motion that we break into executive session for legal interpretation, and you can stay here. We're going to leave. We'll be right back.
Okay. I second.
Okay. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, let the record reflect. We're back in regular session. Board members, would anyone like to make a motion? Or do we need a motion for that? Or
I don't know what you're doing. So.
Well, so
what you've decided.
So we were discussing options, and we want to get some more clarity on the requirements and fairness to you and everybody involved. And so I'm going to suggest that we table this to get more information. We're within the reasonable time frame to make a determination on your licensure application, which was completed at the end of January. And so there's a 120-day clock that starts at that point, where we have a little more time to decide exactly what to do with this. And so, you know, I'd like you to consider taking the special purposes examination. You know, hypothetically, you know, what would we do if somebody was out 30 years, you know, versus 10 years versus 5 years?
I get it. There's a mold in the system, for sure.
So we want a little more time just to get a legal determination.
Right. It's just time and money and everything else. Like I said, I have no problem, you know, doing that if it's required, but there's, you know, considerable time and money that's invested in that for me to have to do that one if I'm not required. Why, right? So,
right.
I mean, that's not my job to fill the hole, but I'm glad that it came out.
Yep. I've made my motion. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much.
So we did 120 days on
the Are you going to bring it back?
Well, we're going to bring it back on our agenda, in a future board meeting. Thank you. Okay. Next tab number is
6, 7, 8.
We just did 7, 8 in the matter of Jessica Wong.
And Dr. Wong has signed in?
Yes.
Hi. Come on up. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. Oh, sorry. I'm Dr. Jessica Wong.
Hi. Thanks for joining today. Dr. Kolesh.
Yes. Dr. Wong's application for licensure by examination and PMMTP certification is complete. She applied for licensure originally by universal recognition, but her active license in Washington expired before her application was complete, and so she elected to apply by examination. Dr. Wong was previously licensed in California and Washington. Her California license was issued in March of 2008 and expired in January 31st of 2018. Her Washington license was issued in July of 2018 and expired January 5th of this year. She reports that her last practice address was in California through 2017, and her reported residential address now shows relocation from California to Washington in November of 2017, now back to Arizona in August of 2019. The usual background checks did not reveal anything reportable, and so the board has may consider several options.
Okay. Board members, any questions for Dr. Wong?
I do. So, Dr. Bennett. Dr. Wong, you have been in practice actively. When were you last in active practice?
I closed my office at the end of 2017, but I was still probably officially closed by February 2018 when I finished wrapping everything up.
Okay. And continue education-wise, where are you on that?
I might be 2 credits short, but I need to renew my CPR and the first aid certification because that has expired. So I just went to a seminar the other day, so I actually might not be short those 2 credits. I have to double check and make sure because there was one seminar I went to where the continuing education was approved in one state, not the other. But I have been attending continuing education seminars, even though I was not actively working while we lived in Washington. And I have been keeping up with studying when I go back to practice. So I have been keeping up studying some stuff where I'm on Dr. Leonard Fay and the CRISP protocol books, keeping up with watching YouTube videos of old examinations, so I wouldn't get too rusty.
YouTube is great. Dr. Kolish, we have certain benchmarks with regard to licensure. Are we confident that those benchmarks have been met here?
For examination, yes.
All right. I have no further questions.
Okay. Anyone else? Any questions?
No. I'll make the motion to grant licensure upon payment of appropriate dues.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. You'll be licensed upon payment of fees.
Okay, thank you. The fees that were submitted with the application, is that?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, tab number 9 is Dr. Brian Bostock.
And Dr. Bostock is signed.
Bostock.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brian Bostock.
Hi, thanks for joining today, Dr. Kolash.
Dr. Bostock has applied for licensure by universal recognition. His application is complete. The usual background checks revealed Dr. Bostock was the subject of a malpractice settlement in 1997. Dr. Bostock is currently licensed in California. His license was initially issued in 1978. He reports no practice address within the past 5 years. So the board may consider the same several options.
Okay. Do you have anything you'd like to tell us at this point?
I was in practice for 30 years. I retired and 13 years ago, I was having shoulder problems, and I was financially able to retire at that time, so we decided to come out to Arizona. My initial thought was to get my license in Arizona within the first couple of years when my shoulder settled down. And I ended up having a shoulder replaced then, so I was down 2 or 3 years local with that. When I did check with the Arizona board, I felt that I was, when I came through school, you had to take state boards, which were very, very stringent. And it was part one and part two of the national boards, which were basically easy at that to, well, made a long story short, when I contacted the Arizona board, they said, well, the requirements that I had to have all four parts of the national boards, and they would not reciprocate with California. And when I asked about that, they said back in the day that the California board was more stringent than the Arizona board. And because of that, Arizona would allow, it seemed like it was a total thing. And so I just decided at that time, they said, well, down the line, they're going to probably open the state up where you could reciprocate. So had shoulder surgery, then I had a heart attack, and I was down for a couple years with that. Then when Governor Ducey said that they would open it up for licensure from all other states and so forth, I maintained my license back in California. The doctor who I sold my practice to, part of the agreement was that I come back every year and work with him and still see the patients and keep things active and so forth from the core that I had set. After I had that heart attack, I felt that I had gotten another lease. I don't go home and see the Lord and say, what did you do for the last 40 years? And say, I played golf, tennis, and pickleball. And I just said, after I recovered from that, that I would get my license. At least start doing more back in California. And then when they opened up here in Arizona, it was just the perfect opportunity to go ahead. And I felt they met the requirements. And so I've applied to reinstate my license in Arizona. My goal is I really don't want to go back into full-time practice. I'm going to see a few people. I'm in an active adult community. People are, they're golfing, they're playing tennis. And I just want the opportunity that if I can help somebody, that I don't have to continue to refer them to all the other doctors around the area. If I feel the need or whatever that I could go ahead and do that. So that's where I'm at with it. That's what I'm doing back in California. I may do some fill-in work. I know the chiropractor who I see, he's overloaded. He's been after me for some time to come in and fill in when he goes on vacation. And I just want to be able to have my license where I can do that.
Okay. Thank you, board members. Do you have any questions? And your malpractice settlement was back in 1997?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you haven't had any problems since then?
No.
Okay.
And in that particular action there, it went through arbitration, and it was all awarded in my favor. And the guy was a CFO of a big company in Fremont, California, and had a largest prestigious law firm in San Francisco. And they all awarded with me, but they came back, and the insurance company said, we don't want to go up against them. You know, you might win, you may not. You're liable for anything over and above the settlement. And they had given me an attorney that had never had tried a case before. And it was like, you know, I didn't want to do it, but I went ahead and I allowed them to settle. I felt it was unfair, but all the records show that everything was in my favor, and the arbitrator ruled in my favor.
Okay.
Quick question, Mr.
Yes.
Chairman. Dr. Bostock, I'm Dr. Wayne Bennett. When was the last time you took care of a patient?
I've seen people back when I go back to California, maybe back. I have two homes. I go back for the summers to California, and when I'm back there, you know, I see people in my old practice back there. I'll go in and help the doctor. I see, basically that, and my nephew's a chiropractor. I always, you know, again, I'm half there and half out here. So probably the last time I saw a patient was probably in late September.
Okay, so a matter of months, and that was an encounter where you were acting as a doctor, accountable for documentation, doing
yes,
everything
sir.
That we require a doctor to do.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm satisfied.
Anybody want to make a motion?
Yes, I'll make the motion to grant licensure upon payment of appropriate fees.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, you'll be granted a license. Welcome to Arizona.
Thank you. Yeah. Can I go ahead and get an malpractice insurance? Will I receive a number or something?
Yeah, you're going to get a license number, and then you can contact your malpractice insurance carrier once that's received.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, tab number 10 is a matter of Dr. Michael Wenstrup for licensure.
Dr. Wenstrup has signed in.
Hi.
Hello.
Come on up and introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Dr. Michael Wenstrup.
Dr. Kolash.
Dr. Wenstrup applied for licensure by examination and PMMTP certification. His license application is complete. He disclosed several minor consumption and DUI arrests from 2008 through 2011. The customary background checks revealed these, but no other reportable incidents.
Okay, so we've read the board meeting materials. We are tasked with public safety, and you graduated in 2019, but you've had these multiple DUI events, you know, between 2008 and 2011. So since then, you haven't had any hiccups?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Board members, any questions?
How many is several?
I only had one DUI, and then I had two MICs during college.
That's minor consumption?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Does anybody want to make a motion?
I'll make the motion to grant licensure upon payment of appropriate fees.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we're going to go ahead and grant you a license.
Yep.
Good. So we'll go on to tab number 11 now. Scott Carpenter.
Dr. Carpenter has signed in.
Hi, welcome.
Hello. I'm Dr. Scott Carpenter.
Thank you.
Dr. Carpenter has applied for licensure by examination. His application is complete. Dr. Carpenter disclosed a DUI arrest in 2010. Customary background checks revealed this, but no other reportable incidents. He holds an active license with no disciplinary action in Iowa that was first issued in 2000.
Okay. Do you have anything you'd like to tell us?
I made a mistake back in 2010. It would have been just over 10 years ago. Greatly regret it. Can't change what's already happened, other than the fact that won't let it happen again.
Thank you. Board members, any questions?
Dr. Carpenter, your plans after licensure, is it to join the joint chiropractic?
Yes, I'm there waiting for my license approval, and at that point I'll join the joint, yes.
All right, this is Dr. Steve Knopf. I will be recusing myself from this vote.
Okay. Anybody want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to grant licensure upon payment of appropriate fees.
Second.
Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We have three ayes and one recused. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Vella, you can unmute your telephone.
Hi. Thanks. We're going to move on to tab 12 with Dr. Vella and Dr. Kolash. Will you give us a briefing?
Dr. Samuel Vella has applied for licensure by examination with the PMMTP certification. His application is complete. Dr. Vella disclosed an arrest in 1992. The customary background checks revealed this, but no other reportable incidents. He has previously held a license in Hawaii from 2004 to 2017 and currently holds a valid but inactive license in California that was first issued in 2001, both with no disciplinary action. Dr. Vella lists his last office address was in California in 2015.
Hi, Dr. Vella. We've read the board meeting materials. Do you have anything you would like to say on your behalf at this point?
Not at this point. I can just say that my last in practice, my wife is Canadian. I had an opportunity to move to Vancouver, Canada, take a new opportunity in the corporate field that was presented to me. And long story short, I said, let's give it 5 years. It's been about 4 years. I'm just practicing myself. The corporate life is exactly the opposite reasons of why I wanted to run my own office and become a chiropractor and was very successful for many years. I looked at it as a new opportunity, a little bit of a life challenge, and my midlife to do something different. And now I can't wait to get back in. I don't want to get to a certain climate or run my own office again. So that's why I'm applying for licensure in the state of Arizona.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Vella?
I have a question. The arrest in 1992 involved what, doctor?
I was a juvenile at the time. In 1992, I believe I was 16 or 17 years old. It was a looting charge. It was completely thrown out. It was a totally misunderstanding by the officer. If you read my report, he thought I was eluding him. I was not. I was pulled over on the side of the road as he was coming by, and he was behind me with a life bar. He didn't see me, turned around, came back, he found me, obviously knew I was there. He gave me the charge of not only a speeding ticket, but eluding. As soon as I went to the court, they looked at it, asked me my side of the story, and it was a rough case. So, again, I was 15 years old at the time. It's been 28 years.
And Dr. Vella, I believe you said in your letter that you were you saw the police car coming, you pulled over with a bunch of other cars and let him, and then he passed, and then you started going again. Is that what happened?
Yep. Officer was coming oncoming traffic. I saw him hit the light that was in a line of cars. I pulled over with the line of cars. There was a large truck behind me. As I sit on the side of the road, I watch him do a U-turn in the middle of the country road. Watch him do a U-turn. He passed by me, and as well as the traffic, I was literally on his shoulder with my wheels still on the asphalt. And however, I lived in between two cars. Never exited my vehicle or anything. And as we all merged back onto the car, he already made a second U-turn and came back, saw my car, and asked me where the heck I was. So I said, I was sitting right there the whole time, officer, and watching him pass by me at 100 miles an hour. So it's just a misunderstanding. He didn't see me. You know, wrong place, wrong time, I guess. And I did plead guilty to the speeding ticket, which was going 66 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone.
Okay, thank you. Board members, anybody want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to grant licensure upon payment of appropriate fees.
Is there a second? Okay, Ms. Powell seconds. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none. Dr. Vella, you'll get a license in Arizona. Thank you. Okay, so you can leave the phone call if you like at this point, or you can stay on. It's up to you. We're going to move on to. Thank you. We're going to go to consent agreements. Tab number 13 is the matter of Dr. Billy Barefoot.
So Dr. Barefoot or in council have not signed in, to my knowledge.
And board members, you should have a copy of the consent agreement in your materials.
I don't believe I do.
It's in the electronic
file. Okay. It's the electronic file. It was added a couple of days ago.
Yes. The board received the signed certificate. It was actually emailed Sunday evening, and so I uploaded it Monday. If you don't have it, I can supply it for you.
Okay. So the agreement says that he will be on a probationary status for a minimum of a year without early termination, and then he'll have to apply to be reinstated without probation.
Yes.
Point of order question. What are our options? The reason why I bring this up is because 4 hours in a situation like this where there were some fairly significant documentation issues, 4 hours of documentation education really seems pretty marginal to me. I understand, this is not that big of a point to me, because I understand that he's also part of the consent agreement is that he would be monitored and have periodic checks of his documentation.
Yes.
But what latitude do we have with regard to modifying a consent agreement that has already been signed and submitted?
We had already decided as a board that the 4 hours was appropriate, I think probably before you came on.
Okay.
But I don't know the answer to that question. We can always modify it at any point, correctly?
Correct? You can. In a consent agreement that's maybe presented to you by staff that you haven't seen before, then you can always accept, reject, or modify it. The fact that a licensee signs it really doesn't, it's not binding on you, but I would agree with Dr. Carino in this case, because it was the board that set the terms for this.
I absolutely respect that. I just wanted to know what the point of order was.
So it's signed by Dr. Barefoot, and if we decide that this is drafted appropriately, then we would go ahead and accept it, and it would become effective.
All right. Well, I would move to accept the consent agreement that was signed by Dr. Barefoot.
Is there a second?
Second motion.
So for just point of discussion, you know, part of the order says that he is required to have a chaperone who's supposed to initial off on patient charting and that kind of thing, and I'm not sure logistically quite how that happens with a electronic health record, but that's up to him and his software, I guess, to comply with that. Okay, so we need a roll call vote.
Yes.
And we have the second. Okay.
I think you
got it.
Yep.
Ms. Powell?
Yes.
Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
Dr. Knopf?
Aye.
Dr. Guarino?
Aye. Okay, so the ayes have it, and we have agreed to accept the consent agreement. And let's go to board business now in tab number 14.
In your packets, you will see a memo from me with the current status of all the licensees as of yesterday. 2,147 active licenses, and there are 45 in the inactive state. 86 retired, there are 20 on probation, and 3 licenses are suspended. This report is especially looking at the administrative suspension category. On January 1st, when the renewal period had ended, there were 2,205 licensees who had active licenses in 2019, but who had not yet completed their timely renewals for 2020 and were consequently placed on administrative suspension. To date, there are still 79 of those licensees in that group. 48 of those 79 have provided us their permanent addresses are in state, and 31 of them have out-of-state addresses with other licensors. Interestingly, our database has an additional 331 licenses that were placed on administrative suspension on or prior to January 1st of 2019, so they didn't complete their renewal application for December 31st, 2018. I think that some of those will likely need to be recategorized. I think that the database might be a little out of date, and some of those may be in the lapsed status. Perhaps some would rather be inactive or retired, and perhaps some have deceased. So staff will be working to bring that category of license statuses up to date. If they would like to have their licenses restored to the active status, they have to go through a reinstatement application for those 331. It's been 2 years. And then there are, the second table shows what else is in our database. And so quite a number of records, but those are just for information purposes.
Thank you.
Any questions?
No. Okay, do you want to move on to the legislative updates or?
Sure. The very interesting one to the chiropractic profession is HCR 2038. I think that's the right one for access.
I think that's
2052. I'm sorry. 2052. I'm sorry, I hit the wrong one. My computer lined them up in reverse order. So, House Bill 2052 is related to having chiropractic care covered under access, and that has passed and is waiting. I think the next thing, Dr. Bennett has probably a better understanding of this than I do.
Yeah, maybe. It passed through the Senate last week, 28-1. It is halfway through the House committee process and expect to be heard soon and voted for from the floor on the House, after which it will have to go through the budget approval process, and so if passed, will not be passed until the end of the session when the budget is approved.
Right. That is actually where I was going with. Thank you. Passed by the Senate, not the House. So that I thought was going to generate the most discussion, so any other discussion? No.
For the record, full scope of practice, a significant factor with regard to our ability to contribute to the opioids crisis and step up as providers for the solution to this process. Perhaps also it should be noted that with the coming of ICD-11 in 2 years, this particular legislation may serve as benchmark to set the precedent for what's going to happen in ICD-11 in the future. So it looks, it's actually very good news.
Dr. Bennett, as I was reading through, was I right in seeing or reading or interpreting that it was through primary care referral only?
At this time it is,
okay.
Yes.
I think they're working on a solution to that, going to the primary care doctors. They're happy to turn these clients or patients over to chiropractic.
All right.
Okay. So House Bill 2175 adds some language for licensing that the person has to be continuously licensed or certified and practicing for at least 6 months in another state before applying. So that helps close a bit of a loophole that is present. I think that's the biggest part of that.
And where's this at, status-wise?
I don't know the answer to that. Matter of fact, I...
That's okay.
If
you
want
to move on,
I can.
Yeah,
let's
move on.
House Bill 2288. Is adding provisions for military service and veterans to ease their licensure requirements.
How so?
It's a
fee waiver. Yeah, it's a waiving the fees.
Oh, okay.
And House Bill 2408. Get my bearings on this one.
I have a question about 2408. If we're on that now.
Yes.
So this is a healthcare providers, including chiropractors, can qualify for continuing education hours up to 8 hours by volunteering free time in designated nonprofit care facilities for the indigent and poor.
Yes.
Nonprofit clinics. As our executive director, now we've got to start monitoring continuing education for these hours, correct?
Yes. What we'll do is have a question. Matter of fact, it is very similar to what we do for people who volunteer for the national board exams, as an example. They are allowed to accrue several hours of continuing education by volunteering to do that. This will be a very similar thing. If you have volunteered how many hours, and they just send a certificate that says from the executive director of that facility.
Okay.
That
so this is a wheel that's already pretty much invented. We're not going to have to.
Yeah, just
not
changing
an administrative burden. Okay.
No. Thank you for asking that, because a lot of things about continuing education are an administrative burden.
I kind of perceive it as an administrative burden because, I mean, with the national board, it's already up and going and respected. And part of the deal when you're testing for the national board is, you get assigned a station. You might have to be overseeing adjusting techniques, or you might be overseeing orthopedic and neurological evaluations, and so there is a component of freshening up your mind on all these tests that you may have taken and not remembered all of them from when you graduated, or that you don't normally use in your practice. So really, how is that comparable to just volunteering in a nonprofit clinic for a CE? So, and then you would have, there'll have to be some kind of tracking of all of the these clinics. I don't know if you'd have to verify the status of the clinic, and so anybody could write down anything that they want, and then the burden will be on us to say, okay, well, is this a reputable center that falls under this statute? So I do look at it as a bit of a administrative burden, potentially.
Is it worth feedback at a committee level when these committee hearings occur? relative to these issues? Is this a significant enough concern that we should voice our concerns about this?
Potentially, but we'd have to agendize that on a future meeting.
Well, I don't know. You have action. I mean, if you want to, it's on for action.
Okay.
If you wanted to direct your executive director to do something.
Well, I just don't think we know what that action would be in this meeting right now. So I think it's you know, trying to wrap up and capture a few of the things from today. Maybe it's just introducing an agenda item for some kind of strategy session and capture a lot of the conversations that we've had today to see if we can close the loop on some of these items.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm reviewing the language, the statute in it, and it is quite, you know, fairly, the language is fairly nebulous in terms of we would be relying upon the facility to meet a benchmark, and then their credentialing, anything they issued would be based upon them achieving that level of official nonprofit clinic that is authorized to participate in this program. And if that wasn't in place, then it's a huge administrative burden on the board to be following up and doing that credentialing ourselves.
And I guess that would be a rule that the board may want to look at some future time, is if this passes, is there strict criteria that helps interpret the legislation?
Yes.
I had anticipated that the letterhead would come on a nonprofit's letterhead. They would give their designation as a nonprofit and name the doctor and his license number, and that would be attached to their application.
We could always volunteer Ms. Powell because she's on the CE credentialing committee. Okay. What about 2690?
So 2690 is also just I need to amend our application to make sure that we have asked people if they have ever served in the military. So this goes to the previous bill, I think, just to...
Fee waivers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that all the boards are, you know, getting that documentation.
This is
an administrative burden, perhaps. This goes to what the board's budget requirements are, essentially. So if we don't spend our allocation, then the state gets to keep the money. And I think that's the bottom line. We are not in the realm of spending less than 50% of our allocation. We're running it much closer than that.
Is the licensing fund, the licensing fund, is that our only fund? This specifically refers to that fund, and I'm not that familiar with how our structure is. Is there only one fund?
Yes.
Okay.
So all of the, we're called a 90-10 board. All of our licensing fees and a few other fees are what we operate under for the budget. 10% of that goes into the general fund, and then the budgeting process determines what the allocation is based on what our expenditures were the prior year.
What is your sense in terms of, you know, you're responsible for an annual budget and evaluation and reporting into the state, and this will be an administrative burden. Do you see it as a significant impact that's going to...
Not on our board,
because of the over 50%?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And the budget analyst will help, they help every agency make sure that they're compliant. They're very good about that.
Okay, so we're not going to have to raise fees necessarily because of this?
Matter of fact, raising fees might put us in jeopardy.
It would hurt us.
Okay. at this point in our...
Which, then we get to the next one, which means maybe we'll lower fees. Huh?
Yes.
So, 2038?
And so, again, this is a more stipulation for the budgeting matters. We have to appropriate, let me get my head around this again. It tells us, giving direction on how we may or may not use our funds.
Okay.
So this is a new kind of, my understanding of this is it's a new entity, a special agency fund. Is there, that entity doesn't exist anywhere else, is that correct?
We are a special agency, and so our fund, I believe that's what this is referring to.
Okay.
Wow. So collectively, all of the special agencies, like any of the licensing boards, are considered special agencies?
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
Okay. In the past, our fund has been swept during times of economic downturn. And I think that this, am I correct in assuming that this is a strategy that's designed to protect funds from that process?
So, okay.
There's a lot of legalese in this language.
The language says that the legislature may not appropriate or divert monies in a special agency fund established pursuant to this section to a different agency or fund unless at least two-thirds of the members of each house. So I think it's making it a little more difficult for them to speak.
Okay, so the special agency fund is one thing. The general fund is another. What this says is it can't happen unless there's a two-thirds majority that says they're going to take that money and put it in.
Right.
Okay. It's clear as mud.
Okay. Anything else for the executive director's report?
Postal 2175. Yeah, it doesn't look like that went anywhere. Not that it ever got heard by a committee. There's no overview, nothing on it. There is a Senate bill 1212 that amends the universal recognition. Proposes to amend that statute. We can put that on. If Mark put that one on, it's not on your list today. Put that on for next month. You can see that one. Thanks.
I will do that. That is all.
That concludes your report. Okay. So we're done with our regular agenda. It's my turn to call to the public, which means you being the public, you get to say whatever you would like to say, comment about the meeting. We cannot respond, so you cannot ask us questions. You can ask questions, but we can't reply. So we can start over here if you have any comments. Anybody? Nobody?
Got a lot of shaking hands.
I hope that you learned something today, and I'll take a final motion to adjourn then.
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.